Funny how in a material world full of pundits and economists obsessed with assets and liabilities personally, economically, and globally, few speak about the greatest of all of these. You, Rashid Ogunlaru.
Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I've got a very, very intriguing guest co-host joining me. His name is JJ Bruhn, and he is known as the retired spy. He has a 27-year career or longer in the military. I'm going to let you talk about it, the Armed Forces of Canada, and the places that you've been and the very interesting tools that you've picked up along the way. Welcome, JJ. It's really a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you, Henry. Yes, the career path. I have two career paths. So I have one with the military, the Canadian Armed Forces. So I spent 20 years in the Canadian Armed Forces. That was the first career. And now in my second career, because there is life after the military, I'm now in my 25th year in DHC Training Solutions, providing or equipping people for works of service. So in the military, my first 5 years was with the Canadian Armed Forces, but it was with the French Regiment, the Royal 22nd Regiment, the Royal 22nd Regiment. I was always drawn to that because there was a member in our village that one day I got a chance to see him, and he was in uniform. And I was, maybe 18, 19 years old. And when he greeted me, he gave me a very good handshake, great eye contact. He had great posture. And he referred to me as Monsieur Bruhn, as in Mr. Bruhn. And I'm like, my gosh, he's older than me. And he had this medal, and he had served in Cyprus on many occasions. Mm-hmm. And it just left a mark that I want some of that posture, that confidence. I'm like, where did you get that? Did you get that when by serving? Did you get that by being in the military? So it left a mark when that happened. And I had a fight with Dad when I was at university. I was studying at the Laurentian University in Sudbury, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And so I would, from time to time, come back home, wash your clothes. And Dad always wanted for the two of us, myself and my brother, to go to university and get a degree. And mm-hmm. he would always refer to, make sure you get a good, safe, secure federal job. Well, he was an entrepreneur. He was an entrepreneur. He at a gas station, at a very young age, I worked at the gas station. He had a sawmill and then a chip harvesting. Lumberjacks and going into the forest, cutting down trees and making wood chips. So he had many entrepreneurial side of him, but he put in a lot of time. And then he would see other people in government, whether it's the provincial government or federal. And on Friday afternoons, they'd be off early, but he would still be working. So he sort of like planted the seeds, make sure you get a good, nice, safe federal job. So, and then when we did have this butting of heads, I decided, well, you know what? I'm going to check out. And I left home and I joined the military. I was tired to be told what to do. And my logic back then, I'm like, well, I'll join the military. So the military for me was an exit strategy, Henry. It wasn't a strategic plan. Right. It was more an exit strategy, as in I just needed to get out and go. And they were going to feed me, they were going to dress me, and I was going to have a roof over my head. And the funny thing, after the third day of being screamed at, your shaved head and looking at people as in not having all their marbles in order, I called home and I was talking to Mom. And says, "Mom, you know, I'll make peace with that. I won't lose my first year of university. I'll get a mentor. I'll double down, and I'll get this. And I won't fail. I'll pass the course." And but my dad was listening on the other line. He said, "You've made your bed, son." And he hung up the phone. "You've made a decision. Live with it." And so that bridge got blown up. But
Wow.
it was probably the best thing ever, as
Inevitable.
in go. So, you know, with the title of your podcast, as in here I am traveling from a small village of 200 people to boot camp in Saint-Jean-Richelieu, Quebec, being screamed at, and where thousands of people and learning everything about the military
Wow.
lifestyle and being screamed at. And it's okay, well, this is home now. You have to pass. Well, there's no guarantee. We're 40 in our platoon. They only need 20 to graduate. So it was a very eye-opening. You know, you have to pass. You have to succeed, as in this is it. So I was very hard on myself, physically and mentally, to just to go and persevere and finish this boot camp and then go to the combat arms. So that's another 16 weeks of hell. I think boot camp is easy. Well, infantry life is a little bit different. But after 5 years, I excel in it. So in the mid-80s, I was a new breed, a new generation. I was bilingual, so I had a French regiment. That's very valuable. I was a little bit bigger, stronger than the average, and I was computer literate, and we were moving towards that area. So I excel. What takes you 8 years to succeed, don't to be a sergeant, a non-commissioned officer within the Canadian military, I succeeded in less than 4 years. So it's a blessing and it's a curse at the same time. Yeah, but I was hard on I was really hard on myself. And then it was time for me to look at, well, maybe there's other options for me to have that career path to stay healthy because my knees were starting to hurt and things like that. So I then joined the intelligence branch. So I re what they call remuster. I just started over and got into the intelligence branch. I was always interested in the mystique, you know, the cool, sexy exclusiveness of
James Bond,
intelligence. Well, that's the image, right? We have the image
yeah.
of the James Bond, and then the MI6, and then all these movies, and they don't have any problem traveling all around the world with or without passport. And so
Right.
it's a little bit different today in regards to what we see, but that's the image that we have. That's the image. So, and at the end, it's like, okay, so I was working for the intelligence branch of the Canadian Armed Forces, and it's just a job. My operative num my number is 431. All the double zeros were taken. That's just the number that I got, 431. Back then,
Oh,
I'm the
bummer.
431st person to graduate spy school in Canada. And then from there, you will work in different areas. Like I've worked on an army base, but I've worked also on an Air Force base, and so you can work into a Navy base, as in it's just different, but in intelligence is the same. It's just information that you're capturing, conversion to an intelligence product, and then you inform the commanding authorities or commanding officers so they can make an informed decision as to where to allocate the resources. So in those 20 years, I have two operational tours. So I've experienced peacekeeping in Cyprus, and I've experienced peacemaking in Bosnia. So during that military career, you do have access to a lot of cool stuff, the John Reed interview and interrogation techniques. You can use that on your kids. Well,
Is that
not quite there, but
waterboarding
it's like, if you want to know what they've been doing, you know, look at me in the eyes. So it's interesting.
that part? Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life's challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person book club meetings, or presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups. For further information, visit psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
The one course in the UK was a prisoner handling and tactical questioning. So that's to prepare you for times of war. And that was unique, because in all I heard is, who wants to go to the UK? And I volunteered, because I heard UK. Mm-hmm. This spring is in the UK. I'm like, cool, I've never been to the UK.
You hear in the background, closer to 007.
Yeah. And then the first hour, you're stripped naked, like no faking. You're stripped naked. You're thrown into a cell, and you go through an interrogation.
Wow.
That, Henry, was not on the agenda.
Wow.
But where does it say that this is going to happen?
Wow.
But here's the cool part of being educated from a different nationality or different perspective.
Sure.
So it stands to reason that, you know, to be a good interrogator, you have to at least experience one time what it feels like to be interrogated.
Absolutely.
And it's not like what you're seeing on the movies. They do training according to the Geneva Convention. But it was a shock. And then it's like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? They talk about being lost. Why am I here? I shouldn't be here. And now you're questioning the whole thing. And can I actually pass this course? I mean, over my head. I don't know this. I don't know what to do. But every student proceeded the same, had the same experience. I was student number 3. And when we all went through that interrogation, we all go back in the classroom and we're all like our head down. And it's like, oh my gosh. And then they started debriefing on all the information that they captured. So we came to me, student number 3. I was flabbergasted. How did you know all of this? Because I didn't answer one question. Not one question. I didn't answer one question. Mm-hmm. But they knew exactly what was going through my mind, because they were using something called BSA, behavioral symptom analysis. Mm-hmm. And when you're trained in BSA, you can read people. You can read what they call leakage, clues and cues, you know, with the power of the questions, you'll have some triggers, and they knew exactly what to do next. As in the next interrogation, they knew exactly my triggers. And that was, I became a student there. I wanted to tell me more about that. Where do you get that? I didn't know about that. They didn't teach me this in high school or college and university. Yeah. I want to know more about that. So human dynamics, understanding human behavior became a passion, I guess, or curiosity. I wanted to learn more. Fast forward, my claim to fame was to be the first one selected for contact handling in Bosnia. So a contact handler is a person where he or she is sent to a hostile environment. So for me, it was the war zone in Bosnia. Or he or she has to cultivate sources, which is building relationships by design, not by chance, mm-hmm. determine people's attention and modify their behaviors if and when required. How do you do that? You know, Jedi mind tricks. So again, going back to the UK and to learn to be a contact handler, that took a whole month of training. That was an eye opener. And then you deploy. The next day, they just ship you into that territory, theater of operations is what they would refer to it. I did not know where I was going to land. All I knew was going to Bosnia, but I was going from London to Zagreb. Somebody's going to pick me up in Zagreb, okay? And then from Zagreb to Sarajevo, somebody's going to fly me to Sarajevo, and somebody's going to pick me up there. And then two people picked me up there. And then it took us 2 days of traveling by vehicle to actually find to a place called Mostar. So if you know Sarajevo, then about 4 hours south is Mostar, and then from Mostar, then they brought us to the safe house in Medjugorje, which is a religious site there where the Virgin Mary had appeared with three girls on top of a mountain, and now there's a big pilgrimage. But that's where we lived, and that's where most of the bad guys lived during the war. Because Medjugorje was safe, they would play in downtown Mostar. We would chase them there, and then at night you're having coffee at the coffee shop with them. Tomorrow, I'll get you tomorrow. Oh yeah. So it was surreal in regards to the lifestyle, and then working there is anywhere from 5 to 7 different nationalities at the safe house. So that became quite interesting in regards to, did you understand what I meant for you to understand? Europeans quite often will speak 3 to 5 different languages.
That's right.
North Americans, at least the Americans, one, English, right? Yeah,
If
if that.
that.
Yeah. And then in Canada, if you're in the east side, then you have to be bilingual, both French and English has to be there. So it became interesting. And that's how my name came about. Because they couldn't pronounce Jean when I was overseas, but they could say Jean-Jacques. Hey, Jean-Jacques. And then they thought they were bilingual. And a British colleague came into the office one time, and we're just him and I, and hi, Jay Jay. And then he needed something on my desk. So I'm like, Jay Jay, Jean-Jacques, Jay Jay. Oh, so if you don't brand yourself, somebody else will. And I got branded Jay Jay, and it became a working name. That it's easy to remember, it's easy to spell, and the contacts, all the people that we were cultivating, building those relationships, they kind of like it because it was easy to remember. Versus on my side, I had to remember all Mio Brajkovic and the dialects and how do you spell that, and it was a little bit different. So very interesting past in regards to the 20 years. What's interesting is that your message is your message. When I decided that, it's time for me to retire, I just saw a lot of missed opportunities when people are looking to communicate. Like, communication is simple, it's just not easy. Did you understand what I meant for you to understand? So that's when I started studying human behavior, human dynamics. I got trained and certified and accredited in a specific tool that I use. There's over 100 tools out there to better understand human dynamics. Myers-Briggs, True Colors, Strength Finder, Bank Codes, the Bird Model. So there's just so many. Find yours, master it. Just put in the 10,000 hours in.
Put links to those too in our description, because I think that this is, this is all about elevating your life skills, and communication is one of the most vital human life skills that we learn universally. And so to find your way as a lost traveler, which we all are, means testing and experimenting with different ways of communicating and finding the resonant one for you.
When you're lost, when you're that lost traveler, what do you do? What's the first thing that you would do? You're lost. You look around if there's another person around,
Right.
and you would ask a question.
That's right. Or you would even look for signs, right, that communicate to you where you are. You look at a map, that's also a form of communication. There are many, many different ways. And one of the things that I've been talking about quite a bit lately is that even our you mentioned the eyes, looking into the eyes. For millions of years, mirrors did not exist. And our eyes are situated in such a way that we cannot look into our own faces. And so rely on the eyes of others in order to reflect back to us who we are. And
I like that.
I think that that's a very important part of this particular life skill of communication that we're talking about. It's not a question of whether people learn these skills. It's in what measure do they learn them, and from whom are they learning them? Right? And how well
Yes.
are they learning them?
Life will provide us character building moments. And we'll see what works and what doesn't work. And then we just need to adapt and overcome. Oh my gosh, it reminds me of that first person that I was given a case study. And we had branded this gentleman as the self-declared mayor of Mostar. He wasn't the actual mayor, but he was the Al Capone, like he was running
We
the
all
town
know those people,
or the Opština. And there's a saying of know before you show. Before you show a product, a service, an opportunity, before you present that idea, you need to be able to discern one's preferred communication style. Like what's their preferred communication style? And so I go through quick, the 2 P's to decoding. So I ask myself, well, what's the pace perspective? What am I seeing right now? What's the pace? Is it a fast pace? Is it a slow pace? Are they loud? Are they soft spoken? As in, what's the pace perspective? So I can match. But that's the pace perspective. You're more outgoing, you're more reserved. You have these two traits in you to a lesser or greater degree, but you do have a preference. I prefer things that are be more outgoing. My spouse, my wife, my business partners, he prefers more a pace that's more reserved. Same thing for my son and my daughter. They're both different. So that's the first P to decoding human capital. I see as everyone having a human capital waiting to be discovered. So I look at the praise perspective, and it's the easiest one to discern because of the physiology, just looking and observing.
Body language and all that,
The second is the priority perspective. Do they lean more on the task side of life? Or they're leaning more on the people side of life. Where do they tend to lean in the words that they choose to use and how they interact? I'm definitely very much task oriented, task focused in my everything that I do. When I get up in the morning, I think about all the things I need to do today. My wife, my spouse, Julie, well, for her, when she gets up in the morning, she thinks about all the people she's going to meet throughout her day. She really is more on the people side.
I'm like
And
that too.
that's the priority perspective. So one side, I will think things through. But for Julie, she will feel things through. So when you're talking to someone, like I want to discern their preferred communication style, but I'm just because this one's harder to read, the task versus, and it's just to say, I'm just curious. And as soon as you say those three words, I'm just curious. You'll see them come close to you. I'm just curious. Oh, what are you curious about? What do you think or feel we should do after our meeting? And it, well, I feel, ding, 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 ding. They'll provide you their preferred communication style, their language. Well, I think, ding, ding, ding. Oh, let's go on the task side. And it gives a different approach. And by discerning this, like the self-declared mayor of Mostar, I started in a friendly manner. I was more reserved and people-oriented and being open. It's our first meeting. I have to build a relationship. How do you build a relationship? Well, you have to have a conversation. Well, how do you have a conversation? You have to ask thoughtful questions. So it's a question that will lead to a conversation. Conversation will lead to a relationship, whether it's a personal or professional relationship. So you can see I'm very systematic in my approach, but that's not where most of the general population resides, more on the people side. And that's not my forte. So I
Interesting.
had to learn this. It's a learnable skill. And it's like, okay. So I tried to communicate in a friendly manner, and he did not want to have anything to do with that style because he would stop me in the conversation because we were going through an interpreter at the same time. So we're face to face, but on our right side, on his left, there's an interpreter, and he or she would translate. So it's like a da 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 da. Like it's just you have to keep your eye on the person so that you have a high touch and not look at the interpreter. So we're training that skill set because then the interpreter will disappear. At one point, but he's always looking at the interpreter. Then he would stop looking at her. He puts his hand up. He stops me. And he says to me, I know who you are and I know what you do. Okay. So because we were working there, he knows our role, he knows what we were
Right.
doing. And I'm trying to go down with my cover story and really, hone in. If this happens again, I have to deep dive and self-edify myself. And he wasn't having it. And again, 5 minutes later, he stops the conversation. He puts his hand up. This is strike number two. I know who you are, and I know that you do. Then I went firm. Well, let's get down to business then. Because he was more of the outgoing and very task focused. He wanted me to communicate in a firm matter. Others like for us to communicate in a fun matter, in a friendly matter, or a factual matter. So decoding one's preferred communication style became very important for me because this is not something that was taught at spy school. It's something I was learning on my own, reading books and understanding the temperament styles or the personas or people's
Right.
preferences and
Right.
just understanding it. Preferences, we all have them. And it's like, yeah, and it's he was and then when we went firm, that was refreshing for him. Well, guess what? It happened to be my style at the same time. So we hit it off. And then we gained access to things that we should not have ever gotten access to. But
Wow.
he was the persona that was running the whole Epstein, the whole Canton. So it was fascinating, gentlemen. But everything that I learned on the battlefield is how it's like, you know what? I need to get out. I need to get out of the military because I can impact more people with what was learned. So that whole saying of your message, yeah.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At bluntreflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at bluntreflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blase blase means to tell your story.
Because I struggle in identifying myself in high school, when you have all your parents or your peers. So what do you want to do?
Right.
Right? Then you open your heart and you share your dreams. Oh. And then they squish it. Right? They just get real and get a real job and well, I want to travel the world, make a difference in people. Oh, but and it's like, well, that's the last time I'm gonna do that. You'll open up and when it was time for me to leave the military, I had to go through a not a career well maybe a career counselor. To diversify and to create your resume and I said, well, I had all the skill sets to run a any a company of 50 to 100 people or more. I'm like, oh, I didn't know I had those skill sets because these are just the trainings that you go through. You cannot be aware of something until you're first made aware. So I was aclouistic, one without a clue. But all of this. And then it's like, oh, I didn't know this. And then he said, what do you want to do? And Henry, the only thing that came to my mind, I said, well, I want to be a motivational speaker. And it was probably not the proper terminology. What I was trying to say, I want to be a person of impact. I want to make a difference in people's lives. I want to teach what I've learned so other people don't have to go through the character building moment, all the crap that I went through, or fast track that and then make a difference, leave a legacy that your life mattered. And he just crushed everything. Well, let's get serious now. Let's just look at a job. And I just basically parked that for 5 years. And it just,
Very common.
yeah. And it's like, you know what? But now I'm in my 25th year. So I started the company at the same time as I was working. In 5 years, I was earning more part-time than a full-time job. I'm like, I think it's time to make that decision of enough is enough, and then just go because I finished as a staff officer in the military. So I did the blue collar and the white collar. I saw both sides, and I specialize in the field of human intelligence. So that's just a different, signals intelligence. We can listen to your phone. imagery intelligence, we can we have pictures and satellites, acoustic intelligence, we know when the submarine starts their engine. But human intelligence is when people are actually on the terrain, capturing, building relationships, capturing that information so that commanding officers can make an informed decisions. But all of that was where I had an opportunity to learn more about human dynamics, people's preferences, really. And it's this is sad. I had to go through that in order to be able to build a relationship with my son and my daughter. So because I left home because of a fight with dad when I was 18. My son left when he was 25, under control. It was time for him. And this week, my daughter leaves for Germany. She just got married. He has an employment. Her husband has an employment in Germany. So they're moving this week, and there are both of them are 25. So, but they're leaving under control, not because of a fight. So your mess is your message. Your mission in life is to share with others what you've learned so that now we're going to be empty nesters. So I had two people on the payroll and no more people on the payroll. So, but I'm pretty sure they'll come back from time to time. So they're off on their journey of getting lost.
Well, exactly. But they've been able to watch you on yours. And there's something called the autonomic system in our bodies that are that are function without our thinking about them. And I expect in your training that these were things that you already possessed, that you do have that feeling instinct about people. And I mean, what I'm hearing is it goes back to that first guy in your village who took your hand and shaked it firmly with confidence. And he was a role model for who you wanted to be. That was the first spark of imagination projecting who you wanted to be like, right? In the future. And to take those skills and elevate them to a way that you can actually translate them into your profession. I think that, or your vocation, I think is a better term for what you have found now, in spite of all of that. You've laid this such a thick foundation in the job, right? And I think there's a marked difference between a person's job and their work. Your job is the thing you do for money. It's the thing you do for expectations of others. It's the thing you do that you can't wait to get home from and forget about, put your feet up. It's the thing you can't wait to retire from someday, right? That retirement word hangs right there in your branding, even. That's a big part of what this foundation was for you. But now you found a whole different way. You found your vocation. The voca, the calling, that which calls to you and that which calls from you. It's where that deep joy in your being meets a great need in the world. And for those of us who are on that frequency of being helpers in difficult times, it's that liminal space where we live between the joy in your being and the need in the world. That's where they meet. And that's your vocation. And bravo for having found that young. You can't be, we're probably about the same age, right? I'm 57.
Oh, thank you, my too.
Okay, well, see, we're close. We're same generation, right?
I often say I'm 59 or 43 US. In Canada, we lose
Exactly.
like 35% of the dollar. So
Exactly. That's
I
great.
share
Well,
this with the
it feels
ladies.
like that, doesn't it? I mean, I don't feel like I'm in my late, I don't feel like I'm pushing 60, but we are. We don't look it, we don't feel it. It's amazing.
My colleagues that were in the intelligence there, they're at that age where they're retiring, as in that they're coming to 60 and they're retiring from the military. So they've served for maybe 30 years. And I'm like, and then they retired. And I'm like, but I'm 25 years in my second career. And I'm like, I still got probably 10, 15 more years in me.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll be 75. And
Exactly.
A leader is not one who looks behind to see who is following them. A leader is one who knows who they are following as they move ahead. So I'm looking at, one of the top three influencers in my life, Dr. Robert A. Rome from Atlanta, Georgia. He's 74 and he's still going at it.
Yeah.
And it's like life continues. He's still having fun. And I met him. He was actually there in Cancun the week that I was there. I take 1 week as a vacation. He was there 2 weeks. And I'm like, what? 2 weeks in Cancun? Well, yeah, it's like the first week was with the family, but the second week he's doing a business retreat in Cancun. Yeah.
Why not?
Because he has this membership. It's an all-inclusive. So he brings people on his membership and he does training now and on the beaches in Cancun. I'm like, I want to do training on the beaches in Cancun. How do you do that? So there's some role models out there, and it's a lifestyle. I'm more looking for a lifestyle now, where it's just making a difference, and then realizing that when I took a look at, from the beginning to where I'm at, I've often found myself in a pioneering position. First one doing this, first one doing this, first that. And you learn so much, but then your responsibility is to share with others what you've learned. In other words, equipping people for works of service. There's an area that you're going to work. And regardless of the work, you're going to have to deal with people. It's like, you're going to have to deal with people. I don't like people. Oh, that's fine. But you're still going to have to deal with people. When you go to the groceries, you're going to have to talk to the teller. You go to the gas station. Okay, you can do everything electronically. Yeah, but when the card doesn't work, you're going to have to go inside. And you're going to have to talk to a person. What happens when your flight is canceled? You just want to talk to a person. You're going to talk to, regardless of the field that you're in, you're going to talk to a person. We don't have any formal training in understanding human dynamics, the tendencies that people don't do things to you, they do things for themselves. So if you understand that, okay, you don't take things so personally when they talk to you in a firm way
Oh yeah, no, for
or
sure.
laugh with, or they just go with the facts, or they're overly friendly. As people get upset by people being overly friendly, and it's like they're just trying to be friendly. It's like I can open my own door. I can grab my own bags. My wife was fighting with the lady at the airport. Julie had, two bags, and I had mine, and she wanted to help her to bring the bags to the vehicle. And she's my and Julie goes, I'm not, I don't want, like she's holding on to this, and I said to Julie, let her carry a bag because, they don't make a big salary, and then we've got this extra money that we're going to provide them, $5, $10 tips, because on an average over there, they're earning about $5 a day US.
If that, yeah.
And so, just be grateful. And then they just love serving. And just, if you had all the money in the world, wouldn't you tip? Wouldn't you just give them an extra $10, And so at the end, and for them, it's like, wow, you've just doubled their salary. If you give them a 20, my gosh, you just because we're very, very fortunate, at least here in Canada, privilege, fortunate, privilege. Yeah. Dr. Owen would ask me, how are you? How's my day? Or something in that regards. And I'm like, it's a good day. Nobody's shooting at me. It's a good day. It's like, well, that's a different. Well, it's like, nobody's shooting at me. It's a good day. We all have our good days. We all have our bad days. We also have to be grateful for what we have and then make a difference in other people's lives and seed into, So now, when I go there, I carry an extra $200 or $300, and the goal is to just to give it out, just to share. It'll come back. It always comes back
It
at the end.
does. There's a, I think there's a law of the universe that whatever you put out into the world will come back to you threefold. And that could be something like a donation, or it could be something like a kind word or a gesture.
Are you tired of feeling run down? Do you wish there was a natural, non-invasive, drug-free way to improve your overall health and well-being? If so, then let me introduce you to the Super Patch Company. Super patches are a range of small neurotech patches that can help with a variety of issues, including sleep, immunity, pain mitigation, athletic performance, focus, anxiety, and stress. They're safe for everyone to use, and they're backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Order your super patches today. Now available in the EU, UK, Turkey, Canada, and the US. If you're ready to take control of your health, you can find out more online at dianedinkmeyer.superpatch.com. Super patches. There's a patch for that.
You have three foundations, right?
Yeah.
Because I was looking on your website, and I'm like, oh, and I can donate to one of the three, and I wasn't aware of except like which one. Could you briefly share those three? Why what prompted you to associate yourself with those three associations?
Thank you. It's each one has its own unique and wonderful story attached. So I'll do the Reader's Digest version. The first one is the Lost Travelers Club, which this podcast is a funding mechanism for, through sponsorships and through listener support. And 15 years ago, I lost my son to brain cancer. He was my only child, and I was a single father, Cameron. And I was feeling a bit of an existential crisis around that time, as you might imagine, being a parent. And Cameron and I started a foundation together called the Brain Candy Project, which the Lost Travelers Club has grown out of. That was specifically for helping parents, helping support parents who were living in hospitals with their critically ill kids. That was my world for 2 years. And we were fortunate enough to be treated where we lived. And so everything I needed was at my elbow. But we met so many other families, hospital from other parts of the country, other parts of the world, even looking for the best care to save their children's lives, going literally sometimes to the ends of the earth. And they are in brutal isolation, already living in a hospital room for months on end. But also being disconnected from their immediate support circles, whether it's emotional, physical, tangible support. And so over time, after Cameron passed, my journey changed from being in that world to stepping out into the world a little bit more broadly. And I was in Europe. I've been in Europe now for 6 years. And I was visiting Belgium just on holiday, just to get away from, I was living in the UK. And I ended up going to Brussels. I took a train to Brussels, and then I had to switch to go to Blankenberg, which is on the coast, a resort town near Bruges. And they put me on the wrong train, and I ended up in Germany. And I got off the train, and I said, Where's Blankenberg? And they said, oh, that's way over on the other side of the country. What are you doing in Germany? And I said, well, I'm not supposed to be in Germany. I'm supposed to be on the Belgian coast. And they said, let me see your ticket. And they looked, they said, ah, they gave you the wrong ticket. You have to go back. And I said, well, okay, is there not a direct train from here, an express train to Blankenberg? They said, no, you have to go back to Brussels, and then they will give you a new ticket. You have to change trains, and then you'll get there. So I got back. And the woman sitting behind the glass, the ticketing agent, looked at my ticket. She was smoking a cigarette, which they still do in Europe. And she took a deep drag off her cigarette. And in her best Marlene Dietrich impersonation, she said, You are a lost traveler. And I almost cried in that moment. It hit me in the solar plexus because to date, there had never been a word like widow or orphan to describe a parent who had outlived a child in any language that I could find. And I had looked in all of them. And so it felt like I was a lost traveler. That's what it feels like to lose your child and not have an identity, not have a way to express when somebody asks you, oh, do you have any kids? Well, you have to open your chest up and pour all your most personal, nightmarish, horrible, deep grief out onto the table for everyone to see. It's no longer sacred. And that was a very important thing to me, was that this is the most sacred part of my journey. And so I was holding that a bit. And then a couple of days later, I was in Bruges. I met a group of women from Holland, and they were having a great time. They were laughing, screaming with laughter. There were about eight of them. And they all gathered around me because I have an assistance dog, a service dog. And he's very cute. And they said, oh, what is this assistance dog? And I explained to them about my journey and about my own disabilities and PTSD and all of that. And so I said, well, what are you just a group of friends on holiday? They were interesting age range, late 20s to early 60s. And they said, no, we have a nonprofit organization called Colegas. And I said, oh, colleagues. So you're in the same line of work? And they said, no, we're all young widows. We've all lost our partners before we expected to. And we formed this group to be able to step powerfully back into the world out of our isolation and grief amongst people who get it. And the clouds opened up and the rays of light are beaming down. And it was the Lost Travelers Club, because they say that outliving your kid is the club nobody wants to belong to, and the club nobody should belong to. And I'm like, well, guess what, guys? We're here. Might as well form a club. Might as well channel our grief into good things, into service, right? So the whole premise of the Lost Travelers Club is to gather together with other what we call peregrines to channel our grief into service. That's our mission. And it's proven to be very enlightening and has given me a whole new perspective on my vocation and my purpose for being here.
Sponsorship and listener support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a volunteer-operated charitable foundation under United Charitable, a 501c3 public charity. Peregrine is the proper noun we now use to describe a parent who endures the loss of their beloved child, forever carrying their memory and embarking on a lifelong journey of grief, resilience, and hope. The Lost Travelers Club provides programs, resources, and empowerment opportunities for peregrines globally who are navigating their grief journey. Parents of child loss, getting there together. You can support this important work by becoming a sponsor of this podcast or visiting www.losttravelers.club for more information or to make a donation. Thanks for listening and for your continued support.
So that's one. The other one is I'm an international theater director. Talk about being in the people business.
Yeah, theater.
Learning about human, human dynamics and human intelligence and psychology, all of that. You know, as an actor, that's got to be in your toolkit, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a director, and I have been an actor. Finished my master's at the National Theater Conservatory. Blah blah blah. So I was in Gloucester, Massachusetts, for about 10 years, where I founded the Folklore Theater Company. Because I feel like very strongly that we are globally losing our stories with the people that carry our ancestral stories. How do we know who we are if we don't know where we come from? And those who didn't have the privilege of growing up in a small village surrounded by the history and the stories that were kept alive, We're losing that sense of self. And so I really wanted to be that reflection in a community. And so I found Gloucester, and it was wonderful. It was great. There was something missing. I felt like I was limited there. And when I was musing about all of this, the sky opened up and in flew this gentleman who I'd never heard of before, who offered me to join up with them as they were creating an international touring company that explored the liminal space between the human physical and the human spiritual through theater. And that was totally where I was at. And I said, yes, by all means, yes. That's what got me to Europe. So this is what we, and of course, being a, both with the Lost Travelers Club, being a travel organization, and with the Liminos Project, which is what the theater is called, to be a touring company, COVID put the kibosh on all of that and just put everything in a holding pattern until we could, you know. But again, like you were alluding to, every challenge comes with an opportunity. And so we have grown exponentially because of COVID. It didn't limit us in the end. It provided more opportunity to stretch the vision beyond the borders of one country, beyond the borders of one culture, and really grow. And so the Liminos Project is an international organization. We have actors from Zimbabwe, from Italy, from Pakistan, from the US, UK, other places in Europe. And we're forming that sort of common ground artistic voice through theater. So that's really important work, I think, in our time. And that's what that's about. The third and final one is called the Desire Child Care Organization. There's a young man in Uganda who is a farmer, and he felt the calling to be a helper to the lost children of his country and of Kampala, the capital city. And he single-handedly, 28 years old, exactly the age my son would be now, incidentally, he adopted 33 children single-handedly, rented a couple of rooms in the slums to get them off the streets, packed these 33 kids like sardines in these two rooms, and didn't have any skills to parent them, to educate them, but he did what he could do. And he reached out. His only means of communication to the outside world is his mobile phone. And so he did this sort of broad blanket appeal to early childhood educators to help mentor him so that he could serve these kids. They're ages 2 to 14. And one of my friends in Gloucester, Massachusetts, got his message and said, Henry Cameron Allen is the mentor for this kid. He contacted me. He said, talk to Bugingo. I think you guys are a great match. He needs what you have, Henry. And he's the real deal. So I contacted him. And since then, I've been mentoring him daily, if not multiple times a day, for more than a year. We've gotten all 33 kids out of the slums. Most of them are now in the countryside where they're breathing clean air. They have clean clothes. They have bedding. They have education. And so what we're trying to do is get each of the kids sponsored monthly, $50 a month US, which I can't imagine one American kid being able to get through a month that pays for all their food, their housing, their hygienic products, especially the girls who are in puberty and beyond. It pays all their education fees. It pays for everything. And so I'm trying to find individuals, organizations, or groups of people, even a club, a social club, or a sports team can pull together. Even kids can do this, right? They can come together and each chip in $10 a month or $5 a month or whatever to sponsor one of the kids. And we've already started that process. We have 27 kids to go. But once we have that, then they can breathe. And the ultimate vision there is to create a residential independent school that is arts-based and finds self-sustenance through agriculture. It's a great vision. It's the only African similar kind of organization that I've ever heard of that says we have a plan for self-sufficiency. It's not throw money at the problem that's never going to go away. It's give us a leg up so that we can help ourselves because they have the capacity to help ourselves. They have the talent, they have the skills, they have the intellect. And it's just a question of getting that little leg up. And I believe it'll happen.
Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well, then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children, ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Childcare is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids. And we have a plan toward self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks.
So those are my three passion projects.
Thank you. So like I saw it on your website and yeah. I'm like, oh, there's three and it's like, okay, but it's nothing like having it shared, like telling the story of each one.
Yeah.
And it brought back some, whoa. flashbacks, and you know, you gave you're giving me a different meaning or understanding of when we say that your mess is your message. You know, life's character building moments, we all have them.
That's
and
right.
You're taking this and you're converting it into something positive. So your mess is your message, your mission, if you so choose to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Why me? Why
not me? Yeah.
It's like, well, God picked you. I don't know. But I don't have all the tools. Ask and that's you right. shall receive. You ask for help. You ask for guidance. You ask for a mentor. You ask. Right. And then just do the next right thing.
And that brings us to the conclusion of part one of our special on unlocking human capital with JJ Brunn. Join us next week for part two. You've been listening to Season 4 of the Lost Traveler Podcast with Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.